What we're trying to do in this class is really about as close to impossible as it gets. In a certain sense, we are trying to achieve an evolutionary step. We're trying to move ourselves out of what it means to be human into what it means to be the Absolute. This is not an easy step. You really have to imagine back at the dawn of mammalian life, some kind of fish form feeling drawn to moving onto land, drawn to leaving the water and the comfort of water, into breathing air, into becoming a form that didn't swim through life but dwelt on the surface of the planet, that dwelt in the realm of gravity, that could actually see the stars, that could get a sense of a universe beyond itself. That didn't happen easily. It had to follow some primordial instinct to move beyond itself. And in a way, everyone in this room and listening to this talk has been touched by that instinct. It may be that there's a dissatisfaction with the life you've been living. It may be that you've been given a glimpse that there's more. It may be that something is just pushing or drawing you to live beyond the confines of what has been your normal life. It could be simpler than that. It could be you just want to be happy. You just want to be more peaceful in yourself. Whatever it is, you're stirred up. Something is moving. It's moving you onward. And you're here. And this is a big step. And some of you have been here for a long time, and some of you have been here for a short time. But I can tell you, not a lot of people move on. Like I said at the opening, it's almost impossible. The journey into the next evolutionary step is very selective. It's partly self-selective, meaning you have to say yes to an almost impossible experience. And you have to devote yourself to it, I would venture to say, completely. It doesn't mean moving into a cave. It doesn't mean letting go of your life. It doesn't mean running away from the world as you've known it. I mean, it might, but it probably is opposite of that. It's probably realizing that the journey into the Absolute is not away from anything. It's into and toward something. It's really not seeing the faults in your and the issues and the problems in your life. It's seeing the opportunity in your life. It's seeing the miracle in your life, something a lot of us fail to do. The journey into the Absolute isn't a journey that cuts off what has been. It's a journey that embraces everything that has been and is and will be. Every human being, every life form is being moved toward and drawn toward that, mostly fighting and screaming every step of the way. Because it's hard. It's very hard. It doesn't serve our ego self to go there. In truth, the ego has to be let go of in order to make the journey. Everything that has been self-serving and protective for you all your life, you have to let go of. You have to stop seeing yourself as somehow cut off from and separate from everybody else. That's part of the admission to this evolutionary experience. And experience, believe me, is the wrong word for it. We are being led into oneness. And of course, the simple version of this is we've never not been part of oneness. But so few people realize it. So few people ever get to realize the truth. And it's a choice. It's really in many ways a choice. We'd rather be wrapped up in our small-minded, inbred dramas than drop it all and discover that all of that was just part of the fuel for our ultimate transformation. In a way, we are pathfinders right here, sitting here. In stopping the flow of the world for an hour, in stopping the immersion in daily drama and tension and conflict, in letting that go for an hour, we are starting to feel something divine, ephemeral, a calling, if you will. We're able to hear the silent voice that leads us into our completeness. It's very hard to hear it in the world. The noise of the world is very self-reinforcing. It reinforces ego drive. It reinforces all of your, I have to do this, I must do that, why can't I be that, what's wrong with me? All of that stuff, that din of noise that drives your life crazy, all of that has to be let go of for a while. And out of that incredible stillness that you can achieve in sitting here quietly or sitting by yourself quietly, there's this tiny, tiny voice that goes, this way, this way. Follow me, follow me. Yes, yes, no, yes, yes. And you follow that. And it's so amazing because it's leading you to the very thing you have been seeking your entire life and maybe even billions of years. But it knows the way. It knows how to go. The same way a tree knows how to grow out of an acorn or a seed. We know how to do it. But the complexity of being human is that part of what we need for this journey is a mind. This analytical processing computer-like thing that helps us navigate through the thickness of this dimension of our lives. And the very thing you need to drive you through all of this is the absolute obstacle to the next step. And the next step in human evolution is letting go. Letting go. Letting go of what? Well, pretty much everything. That's why this is so hard and impossible. Because there are things that you can let go of pretty easily. Few. But there are things you will not let go of ever, or so you feel. Probably one of them would be identity. Everything you fought so hard to create since you were a little child, how can you let go of this person that you are? How can you let go of this wonderful or awful thing that you've become? You don't have a clue. And yet, when you sit in absolute stillness, and for however long in that stillness you don't listen to your mind reinforcing you, what you experience is everything I'm talking about. This 1 hour of or 10 seconds of freedom from you, release, a sense of connectivity, a sense of being helped, a sense of being embraced, comforted. It's all there. It's all there in the stillness. But it's so alien to the human experience, especially now, in which noise seems to be the great proliferation of distraction. And we hunger for it. We hunger for it. It's so attractive. I just got a DirecTV installed in my house upstate. You know, for about a week, we had no landline, we had no cell phone reception, we had no internet, we had nothing, nothing. And it was really scary. It was so destabilizing. I felt so, I couldn't call anybody. I couldn't ask for any help outside myself in the world. But it was also very real. It was very, we are who we are. It was Blanche and I against everything, or with everything. It was really powerful. It's really powerful. Not comfortable, but powerful. And it was transformative, and I knew that. And then the landline came in, and I was like the happiest person in the world, and the internet went on, and then the other day, DirecTV hooked up the satellite, and all of these televisions came blaring to life, and I couldn't not watch it. It's like, oh my God. It was so thrilling, so colorful. I mean, it was like amazing, amazing. It was hard to turn off, but I have the power. You can turn off the world. Having the choice is what is so wonderful about this evolutionary process. Because part of this evolution has created big screen TV, flat TV. It's the most unbelievably thrilling thing. It connects us in a worldly sense to each other, and it's amazing. But the real connection is when you go, turn it off and sit down and get quiet. And then this thing happens. Oneness. Pure oneness. I also get this wonderful thing that not everybody gets, which is I have this little granddaughter, and she and I sit together, and I would give up every television in the world and the internet and everything else for what transpires between us. I told Blanche the other day, I've never known anything to be more real. It's just so real. This connection, it's so beautiful. And I can't even explain it, but it fills me with a kind of liveliness and playfulness and joy in being and laughter. And it's unbelievable how much wonder comes out of that. So much bigger than anything you get on TV or in the movie theater or whatever you're looking for to distract you from this reality. But she gives that to me. And then even that is just a taste of something that's simpler, which is the ultimate joy of just being. Just being. And how often do you taste it? Maybe when you're driving in the car and forget to turn on the radio. You know, maybe as you're drifting off to sleep. But this joy of being is an evolutionary truth. The joy of being is not limited to you as an individual. It is a global experience. It is a connectivity to all that is. All that is in manifested form and in unmanifested form. And just to have it all in the manifestation is just a little flavor of the unmanifest, which is much bigger than the manifested. The earth is this big, the universe is infinite, and you are the universe. You are the universe. Trust me. You are all there is. And I know you don't believe that. Or if you do, you don't get it. And of course you can't get it, because who are you to get it? It can't be gotten. It can only be, and it is. So what happens is the you and the getting falls away, and then there's just the, huh. And then it comes alive in you. It is alive in you. It's always been alive in you, and it speaks in you. So you have this practice here of letting go of you for a minute or an hour or whatever, and you feel that, oh my God, it's so beautiful. You're being asked to let go of you, the most precious thing you have, to discover in some evolutionary truth the bigger you. How do you let go of you? I was writing to Michael the other day, and I wrote this story that I had heard, which I loved, and I'd forgotten about it, and I'll remind you of it. It's about a Zen teacher who's sitting with his student, and they're both holding cups of green tea. And in the middle of the drinking this tea, the Zen teacher says to his disciple, "Let go of your tea now. Let go." And the student is holding the tea midair. And he realizes if he lets go of the tea right now, it will drop to the table, it will break the cup, it will splatter all over the place, and it will be a big mess, and it's hot. And you might get burned. All of these issues come up. And yet his teacher says, "Let go of the tea now." And he's caught because he wants to be a great student, and he wants to just let it go and spill everywhere. And he doesn't, and the teacher looks at him smiling, and the teacher reaches out and takes his cup from him, and then he does this, just for the camera. He puts it down on the plate, the saucer, and he lets go. The mind thinks we have to do this big dramatic thing. Let go. It's not dramatic. It's simple. Let go. Put the drink down on the saucer and let it go. That's all we're being asked to do in this extraordinary evolutionary leap. And we're so confused about it. How? What do I do? How do I do it? You know how to do it. Don't get caught in your brain trying to figure it out. Just let go. Let go. Open to what is right there. Be present. Be free in yourself. You know, we have all these issues, and every one of you, when we sit together, brings up the issues. And I have my issues. We all have issues. And they really cloud the screen. They cloud it completely. We're all caught up in our stuff, our issues. And if I say, let go of your issues, you don't have a clue. I don't have a clue how to. But let me tell you, meditating is sit down, cross your legs or put them flat on the floor, take your hands, palms up, close your forefinger and your thumb together, holds energy inside, it's a very vulnerable pose, back straight, simple. In our class, eyes open. To keep accountable, if you will, looking at a photo of your teacher, or just looking at your teacher if you're living in the presence or sitting in the presence of that teacher. and let go. Let the issues go. Just sit down. It's like letting down the cup of tea. Just let it go. You don't have to hold on to your issues for an hour or however long you're capable of doing it. Let it go. And then what happens? There's a kind of the wonderful teachings of every religion of this clear sky image. Clear sky. And then stuff comes into that sky. Clouds and thunderbolts and meteors and sunlight and darkness and, you know, everything comes into that clear sky. And, you know, it actually affects us. You know, I mean, Seattle, my God, clouds come all the time, most of the time. When the sun comes out, it's like, oh my God, sun. You know, but the reality is there's a sky and it's completely empty and stuff comes in. In the best of worlds, you don't relate to that. You just go, oh, the sky now has clouds. The clouds are changing form. Thunder clouds come up. Stuff happens. It goes away. Mostly, we just trust the sky to be there all the time. And stuff will happen. And if it's really bad, like what happened in the Philippines last week, or Hurricane Sandy, I mean, the sky can fill with real stuff, drama. But then it gets just completely clear and the sky never goes anywhere. Stuff just happens in it. If you sit still enough, you will experience your mind as the sky, clear as can be. And then stuff comes up. Your thoughts, your ideas, your issues. And you'll see them come up. If you are evolutionarily developed, you will relate to all of that as though you are the sky. And you will see these things form inside and you will go, aha, aha, look at that. Thunder, look at that. Nobody loves me. Look at that. My parents were too protective. Look at that. All this stuff comes up and you go, ah, yeah, huh. Or if you're a normal human being, you sit there and you go, nobody loves me. And you're in the drama of nobody loves you completely. Completely. You forget you're the sky. You forget you're that vastness. You forget you're that extraordinary clarity. You become this person caught in the drama. And then if you're lucky, you have a teacher or somebody who says to you, sit still. Get quiet again. Remember who you are. And you get quiet and that drama subsides. For an hour or 10 seconds, and you go, oh. That's the practice. That's the work. Remembering to get quiet and know who you are. You are all that is, and in that erupts everything. Do you have to identify with everything? No. Do you have the muscle to do that yet? Probably not. That's why I say this is almost impossible, because it took me 50 years. Who has the devotion to sit somewhere and practice this for 50 years? You know, Rudy said it's a life's work. He meant that. It's a life's work, completely. This life's work is worth it. Because it has evolutionary power, because the world is changing. We are going to witness some of that change. It's happening already. You know, I just saw a headline in the New York Times this morning, really interesting headline. The people of the Philippines, where this horrible, horrible storm occurred, are angry at us, the West, because we who are the biggest consumers and creators of energy use in the world have created these storms, and they are the ones suffering them. We're one planet, we're one world, and there is a horrible imbalance in this world. It's horrible. And they're right about this. Why should they be paying the price? Why should the impoverished people of the world in small paradisical island structures have to live with the results of great, great misuse of energy in the world? Why? The truth is, we are a oneness. We are a collective. That's what we are. And in a manifested sense and in the unmanifested sense. In the manifested sense, we're all here fighting for our own energy. Fighting for, I want my electricity, I want my 3 televisions, and I'm guilty. I want all of these things. I want it, I want it, I want it. And there are people who can't have it. So this collective of energy is really destabilized. It's really in a very bad way. And we're watching it trying to work itself through, and we're having things like climate change. You're having all these huge worldly developments, and we are all watching them happen faster than any of us thought would happen. And that's just on the manifested state. In the unmanifested state, we become aware of our singular connectedness, of our oneness, that the person in the Philippines is us, that each of you is me. We are one thing. We are one collective entity. And we don't know that, which is why we create such disturbance and hostility in the environment. But the evolution of the psyche, of the soul, those who have the willpower, people who have the drive, who have the instinct to grow, are going to know that you are that. That hurricane comes from you. Not from you just as an individual manifested person, from you as this vastness of being. We are this one thing, and we are completely connected. Completely connected in every way, from the manifested to the unmanifested. From the tiny ant in the dirt to the bees, which are, God knows, failing in our culture, in our world, and going to create more havoc. I mean, there's so much going on in this world, and we need to grow. We need to evolve. Every one of us needs to do this, and it's almost impossible. So how does this work? Well, you are here now, for some reason, listening to this talk, and knowing you have an opportunity and maybe even an obligation or responsibility to take this seriously, to do this work. I don't know how many of you will pull it off. In a way, that's not my concern. I really feel deeply concerned about this entity doing the work. And that's what's been going on for 50 years. There's been a dropping off and a dropping off and a dropping off and a falling away and a falling away. And really, what's speaking to you now is at the core of this Bruce person. But that thing which speaks at the core of the Bruce person is exactly at the core of each of you. And when it finally finds its voice, it will say everything I'm saying. In almost the same way. It won't necessarily use my words, but it will have the same instinct, the same authority, the same level of commitment. Because that's what's at the core of every one of us. That's who we are. We are this singular voice. You can call it oneness, you can call it cosmic self, whatever you want to call it. I won't say God because it'll throw people off. But that's kind of what it is. It's this thing, and we are that. And we are here with a responsibility to evolve, and it's hard, and it's impossible. But it happens. The miraculous happens. And it can happen for each of you if you are committed. And committed means committed. It means this is what you do, it's what you think of, it's what drives your life. For me, it's that all that's there. You know, I mean, yes, other stuff comes up, you know, God knows we're all human, but then you suddenly just reach out and embrace that. You fold it in to the incredible frosting that you are. You know, it's all blended in, it bakes together, and it creates this unbelievably extraordinary reality for you to live in. You live in this place that your ego personality is one with the vastness of time and space. It's all one thing, and it's who you are, and to not know the totality is to miss it altogether. You're here for this wonderful, wonderful ride. this extraordinary opportunity. You have this historic chance to change the universe right now, and it needs to be changed. It needs to happen. It's not just like a little invitation. This is like, hey, guys, now, this is the time to do it. Now is the time to say, I want to do this. I care about this. It's important. And not to be vague, ambivalent, kind of interested, because it's not going to do it. It's not going to do it. It doesn't work that way. So you have to look to yourself and go, what do I have to do to evolve or be part of this evolution? What do I have to do? And you work your ass off until you can't work your ass off, and then this deep inner thing takes over. But in order for it to take over, you have to let go of the final impediment to its taking over, which is your absolute dedication to this little ego mind. You just have to let go and trust, not knowing what's going to happen next, not knowing how to take the next step, and yet it happens. So amazing. You don't know how to do it, but it still works. Just the way your body works. You don't know how to beat your heart. You don't know how to repair your cells. You don't know how to work on your body, but it knows how to work on it. The same thing with this evolutionary process. Trust this thing in depth. Trust that it's happening. Give yourself over to it. Say yes to the demand that it's going to make on you, because it's going to be huge. And say, I am ready for what is about to happen. And it happens. It will happen. So, as impossible as this is, the only way it's going to work is not if you're chosen, but if you choose to choose yourself. That's how it works. You are chosen if you choose yourself. And it's no longer a game. It's no longer, oh, I'm a yogi. Oh, I meditate every day. I can pick up girls because I meditate every day. Or whatever it is you think you can do with being a meditator. It's not about that. This is the time to take it seriously. So I've now said this about 400 times. You get the message. It's up to you. Any questions?
This question arose when you're talking about oneness. Do you think that one can be a fully committed spiritual person without liking people very much? with the exception of everybody in this room, of course.
Well, you could, yes, in a certain sense.
I say that lightly.
No, but in a certain sense, I mean, what you'll see is a lot of unlikable people. But rather than feeling dislike for them, what starts to happen is you feel an unbearable compassion for their ignorance. Because they need to evolve to make this work. They need to make this happen. You need them. So the people you don't like very much are probably the ones you need more than anyone. Because the ones you like, they're already taken care of. You just need to support that. It's the other ones. And what do? You cultivate a couple of them. That's all you have to do. Who are the ones you don't like? Usually, the ones you don't like are having a real... They affect you. Why are they affecting you? Well, that's a good question. Look to the ones who affect you and then do the work. Usually, they're very close to you. They're probably right in the core of your own mandala. And if they're not, then they wouldn't affect you. You don't care if that person in the supermarket line... I refer to supermarket lines a lot. You don't care if that person's a real shit. You don't. It's like that's their problem. But the person who's a real shit in front of you all the time, you care about that a lot. And they're your work. That's the job. How do I learn to like them? Which really means accept them as they are and open to them and be present with them even when they are pushing all of your buttons. Because those buttons that they're pushing are contained within the sky that you are. When you are the sky, who cares? Who cares? The sky does not care if it's a beautiful cloud and a lovely sunset or a rainy day or snow is falling. It doesn't care. It just is like, oh, wow, snow. Oh, You know, oh, hurricane, wow, boy, that's what it does. It's all of that. But having a person you don't like in your life is a signal to you that you're limited in some way to an ego aspect. The sky doesn't judge. It just is. And they exist within that. And you will find a way to be wildly compassionate for everybody. They will break your heart. They will break your heart with their suffering. If you got to know that person and why you don't like them and you could penetrate into it, you would fall in love with them. Because they are in such pain. And you get it. You get it because the only way to evolve is to go through that. You don't evolve by letting go of the painful struggle. You evolve because you've gone through the painful struggle. It's hard. And you will feel, wow, it took me a lifetime to do this. They're not even beginning. They haven't begun the journey. They haven't taken the first step. And you know what they have to go through. You know. Everyone has to go through this. It's like, oh, wow, anything you can do to help them. Any occasional rub on the shoulder or a moment of somebody not judging them is such a gift. And you can give that. That's all we end up doing. When you become the sky, you become this beneficent container for all that goes on. And you just send, I mean, the difference between sky, which seems so removed, is that real presence, real being, has at its core love. The idea that the sky loves us is kind of a little too abstract. But in the spiritual sense, the void, the oneness, the vastness of space and time has as its essential ingredient love. And if you don't believe me, sit still for an hour and see what erupts. It's like, anyone else?
I'm not sure what the question is in this. Maybe you can help me tease it out. But it sort of ties together these two ideas. This idea of this of love. I mean, on my way out on Sunday morning to the babies and getting out the door, at that moment wants 5 more minutes of hugs. It's the most delicious thing in the world. And then I'm in the car, and my foot is sliding off the pedal and on the gas, and it's the most mysterious thing. I look down, somehow between 2 steps between my front door and the car, someone must have let their dog take the hugest dump on our front lawn. And I'm sitting in the car this morning, and I'm telling you, there's shit everywhere. On my shoe, on the gas pedal, on the brake pedal, on the floor. I mean, more than you can imagine. And I felt utterly powerless, and I did not know what to do. I mean, I wanted to get here. I wanted to get this. I just did not want to sit and shit this whole trip. And I was 1 block from the house, and I just sat there. I really, you know, I did not. I mean, I wanted to stop. I didn't know, but I couldn't move. I couldn't move a muscle. I moved. All I had to do was just drive. It was just extraordinarily terrible, but, you know, it just reminded me of letting go of the teacup on some level. I mean, just, you know, I just sat there and drove here, and it's in there. It's in the car right now. So my sneakers are out on, they're still there. They're on the side of the road. They're not in the house. That's my short question.
Rudy said specifically to that, literally, he said, if you step out the door into a pile of shit, he said, the most you can do at that moment is know that the worst that's happened for the day has happened, and now it's going to be a great day. That's exactly what he said. You know, you've gotten through the piece of shit you needed for that day, and now you, literally and figuratively, and you now are able to move on. You know, it's a great story. It's a great story. And the fact that you kept driving, the fact that you sat in it and manifested your sitting in this space speaks volumes, of course, about you and who you are and why you're here. And I have to say, in working with you today, you know, the energy spoke to me very loudly about you today, and it was really beautiful, really beautiful. And it's exactly because of your coming through all of that, that what I felt happening was happening. You know, that's the kind of commitment that it's looking for. evolutionary force wants someone who will go through that. We'd have every reason to turn around, every reason to go back home, every reason to say, clearly this is a sign that I should not go. You know, but you didn't take that. You kept going. Why did you keep going? Because of something in you that manifests itself. I don't know how you get out that door every Sunday morning. I have no idea. When those girls are at you, wanting to hug you and kiss you and love you, why would you want to come here? I mean, it would. That's not an easy call, honestly. And yet, you do it week after week after week after week. And is there a benefit in that? I would say, when you come home, you will bring a larger quantity of love than you might have even been able to give it that in the morning, maybe. And you get refreshed and nourished by it in a way that has cosmic significance, not just personal significance. And it will deliver itself to you and to many, many others in time because of the effort you are making to go beyond the pull of the joy and pleasure in your immediate life for something greater down the road. And trust me, it will be greater down the road. It will be. It's already in play. You know, it's locked in because of your commitment. And that's exactly what it takes. It's the difference between an ordinary effort and an extraordinary effort. This requires extraordinary effort. Crawling out of the ocean onto land is not like, oh, I think I'll try to go onto the land. Yeah, it goes against everything inside you. How can you possibly leave water? How can you leave that for this thing called, you know, you can barely breathe in it. But the gills learned. The gills learned how to turn into lungs. They figured it out. You are figuring it out. And it takes exactly this kind of commitment. And God knows we're going to give you a roll of paper and we're going to bucket of water and hope maybe everyone will go out to the car and help you in a collective sense get rid of that shit, you know? And the great thing about that is that that's how it works. Ultimately, it gets cleaned up and you get freed of it. And you have grown so much as a result of the commitment and the effort that was made. That's all I can tell you. And I don't know if it was a question, but it's a good story.
Well, just one little extra piece of the story. It had nothing to do with the shit, but Bo, this morning, about coming to class, and you know what makes it seem very natural, there's a book of Rumi poetry right by the bed, and Bo's in bed with Chelsea and I. I said, hey, who wants to hear a Rumi poem? And Bo said, yeah, I'll do. And I started to read. This, it was called Meadowlands. It was in the middle of nothing. It was the middle of the book. I just opened it up randomly. And as I started to read, Bo just went like this. She's 4 years old. She just went like this as I was reading the poem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was just incredible. And it's like, of course, we've got to get the class.
They get it.
They get it.
They get it. And it gets bred out of them, but ultimately, it's the seed is planted. That's all I can tell you. And their life will become part of the evolutionary journey because you allowed that to take place. And that's all we really do as parents, if we're lucky. We either breed them to get part of the insanity of the world or to reach out of that into the next step. And that's what we are trying to do, and God knows the world needs it. Anybody else?
Yes, more technical question about. So as most people in here know, I'm rather new on this scene. So when I practice at home, and sometimes even here, as everything begins and I do the double breath and I begin to feel things flow, I'll notice restrictions through my chakras. My mind has fallen away, at least for a moment, but then I feel the blockage or the restriction or the crystallization or whatever it is I feel there, and I want to deal with it. So my mind comes back in and begins to think, well, what is this? And before I know it, I've spent 10 minutes thinking about something I should just be looking at.
Yeah, well, you're right. That's the end. You can go there. You don't have to go there with your mind. Okay. This stuff comes up. It does for me, too. You know, I sit with each student and different chakras start to go, and I realize, you know, for me, in some way, your system has just entered my system, and I just go to those places and I just sit there. And if you sit in the middle of this tension without saying why, because why doesn't give you any answers worthwhile. They just keep you distracted. You just go to that space and you just sit in the new tightness or the new configuration, and then it opens. Or it doesn't open. But just sit there for a while. Just sit and watch what happens.
The difficulty I'm having is differentiating between just sitting there and thinking about it.
Just sit there. Thinking about it is just the mind trying to get involved in sensation. But don't, I mean, if it's going to do that, it'll do it. But if to the best of your ability, just sit there and go to these places or take a breath in those places and let it break itself down. It takes a while. I mean, look, I mean, it took me years to be able, there are certain parts of my chakras really deep inside that tend to lock up. And I have to go really work it. But when I'm working with all of you and your configuration comes in, I have to go and find a way, and that really helps me deal with me, because if I can work with your stuff, I can work with parts of my stuff that have always been inaccessible, and more and more and more opens and opens and opens, and you're this vast flow, oceanic flow of whatever, being, consciousness, love, and it takes place. It's just, you know, there's stuff inside you that's been locked up a long time. Part of my experience as a teacher is sometimes I sit with people and their personality of this moment is just gone. Their ego mind, even their personal life seems gone. And it's like there's a series of changes into a past life of somebody who I don't even recognize, and they probably don't recognize. And I go, who's this? And it doesn't matter who it is. I don't need a story, really. I just go, this is something that got locked up a long time ago, and it's presenting. So my job as teacher is to work with the presenting tension, which can be 12 centuries old, you know, and open it up. And then it goes, oh. And then you may or may not be aware of it, but I know the work is done. That's why you came and presented here. That's why this particular teaching is about opening deeply to a teacher who's present. And that teacher's energy, which is quite old, goes in and fixes it. That's what it does. And it's taken care of. It's an amazing thing. I mean, it's really amazing. I don't know how it works or why. But Rudy did that for me for all 7 years that I was with him. He just went in and went, he was fixing and fixing and fixing. I could never be sitting here today if somebody hadn't taken that job of making me whole, of working the system to get all these blocks and tensions and crazy old patterns fixed. That's what we're doing. You know, I don't know why it happens in this room or how it happens, but I know it happens. And I'm aided by many forces. I can feel them, sometimes even name them. Today, Nityananda was unbelievably present and working on everybody. And I had nothing to do with it. The hands moved, you know, the energy moved. And I just went, I don't even sit down and go, oh my God, look what's going on. I just stay completely quiet. And it works. So it works. And it will work for you. But it's a dance between this energy and your conscious awareness, meaning you feel the tension, you go to that spot, and you relax in that spot. You don't identify with it. You don't turn it into a story. You don't look to be analytical. You just sit in your own space, feel this thing. This energy comes to you. Your consciousness of that energy meets it, and the two of them dance, and something will be different when the class is over. There will be an opening. And you will be a different person. Unless, you know, when you get up back in the car, you know, you start to become the other person again, and you take it on just because it's familiar. A lot of us do that, and I call that yo-yo meditation. You keep getting through something and you go back to it. You get through it and you go back to it. You recreate it. There comes a point where you say, I don't want to do that anymore, and you're free of it. You just really change. True change. Evolution. Okay, anybody else?
One more thing. Oh, I want to thank you for having your friend on Friday.
Oh, sure.
It was great.
Well, no, it's a pleasure. Having him here was a gift to me, too. He's such a... Swami Ganeshananda is a... You know, he and I were best friends when Rudy was alive, and we had a great time in Rudy's presence, and he's connected to that, and he's part of this energy flow, and he absolutely represents it with a kind of purity that is rare and quite beautiful. So I'm glad you were all able to partake. I was really glad that you all made the effort to come here. That, I mean, those of you who could, it's really wonderful. I didn't know that you would do that, you know? I mean, there is a concern that people who came for that would say, well, I've done my meditation for the week, and they wouldn't come on Sunday. That's a real common phenomenon. But for people who could make the extraordinary effort of coming to both, you know, I hope, hopefully that it proved to be beneficial on both ends. Anyway, thank you all. And see you next week. Next week I am I'm going to Korea for the Korean opening of Ghost, which is very exciting. But sitting in this spot will be my wife, Blanche. And those of you who are lucky enough to sit with her will discover one of the great spiritual presences of your life. It's a gift to be with her, and I hope you show up.